Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm so excited to be joined by Dr. Neil Gupta. Neil is currently the Director of Secondary Education in Worthington City Schools. He has been a teacher, assistant principal, Director of Secondary Curriculum, Director of Curriculum of Teaching, Director of Assessment and Programming, and Lead Up Chat Moderator. Neil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be here. I appreciate it.
And Neil, as you know, the show is centered on leadership development, and I would love to hear your personal leadership journey.
Yeah, so it's been a great ride with all those titles that's been covering three different school districts in the state of Ohio, and it goes from a rural districts to suburban districts. You know, and it really started, I think, from an aspect of a little bit of luck and a lot of hard work. Where the luck comes out is I was fortunate enough to be in a school district that had an external review that was done prior to me actually getting there. And they had another, you know, a company come in. It was a quality improvement. They were working with a consortium, and they looked at a number of different qualities, and they found out that there wasn't an overt stance in succession planning, that districts didn't really think about that proactively. Districts tend to, you know, think about the leaders that they currently have. Administrators or building principals tend to leave, and then they kind of start over. There's always somebody to fill the role, but what you lose is that institutional knowledge. And so they found out that they were in this imbalance. You know, I don't know what the percentage might be, but you definitely want to have some outside blood that comes in to look at things differently, to ask the why question, why do you do it that way, and catch people off guard with, so that they don't say this is the way we've always done it. But you also want people to grow from within, and you want to be able to be in a place where that institutional knowledge is in there, relationships are in place. So I started in my teaching position in the same high school where I graduated from. So when I walked in and they had this evaluation that was done and said that you need to spend more time doing that, I feel like, you know, the district really poured into me and said, we're going to not wait for you to be a department chair or not wait for you to have a title, but we're going to go ahead and invest in you now without a title. And this, there's some learning that goes along with this, regardless of the principals that are listening to this or the district administrators. You know, we tend to think about titles and we might say, oh, I've got this great leader, but I don't have, you know, but there, I already have a department chair. I would say don't wait. You have teachers that are those diamonds in the rough right now that are chomping at the bit for leadership. They are people that want to run. They're not always looking for a title. I think sometimes they think that there has to be a title, but really what they want is latitude, the opportunity for somebody to let them run ahead, pilot different projects. I was able to go serve on our district leadership team. And so, you know, when you think about district leadership team, some teams have district representation of district leaders and building principals, and then they think about the department chair, but they don't think about having a first year or second year teacher serving on that. And so I was able to do those things. When we send teams to different conferences, we tend to think of sending our seasoned veterans along going to those things. But what about those young teachers that are things that people that we say, you know what, let's go ahead and invest in them now so that they stay and they help build into that. So, you know, I think I was lucky enough that a district believed in me, and I think and then created those opportunities so that I could kind of advance, and they took a chance on me. And that was an awesome opportunity for me to grow in those leadership responsibilities.
And so when you were a teacher and you were moved to the assistant principal position, what was the biggest surprise to you?
You know, I think the biggest surprise was actually when I sat at the table, I thought I was going to be offered the assistant principal position, and I was actually offered the principal position. Oh, wow. And I was caught off guard by that. And I had to make a decision at that point, you know, about, gosh, you know, it was tempting. It was very tempting to you know, think about the money, think about the leadership, thinking about what it would do for my career and personally. I mean, it was such a great honor to be asked, but I turned it down. And it was a you know, kind of a fork in the road sort of thing to kind of say, you know, the superintendent at the time said, are you sure you're going to turn this down? And I said, yeah, it didn't take me long to say I'm going to turn it down. Reason why was because we had an assistant principal there for, gosh, I think he was an assistant principal for 20 years. And he was an assistant principal when I was there in high school as a student. And I said, you know, he deserves it. He earns it. And I'd love to work for him. I'd love for you to promote him from assistant principal to principal, and that position would open and let me be the assistant principal. the superintendent at the time said, I'm not offering that position. That may not run the way that you want it to happen. So are you giving that up? And I took a chance. I took a risk and said, yeah, I think that this building deserves somebody with a little bit more seasoned tenure experience. I think that I need as a leader to go through those steps that if I would have gone there, I think that the staff would have given me a little bit of latitude. I think the parents would have given me latitude, and it would definitely have been a learning curve. But I said, you know what? There are certain aspects of that, the assistant principal position, of learning some discipline, learning a master schedule that will make me a more effective principal in the future. And so I'm gonna decline. And I think that's an important conversation. I think it's important to say, not from an arrogant standpoint, to say, you know, I turned it down a position, but to say, you know, we sometimes run too fast. And instead of saying, you know, enjoy the journey, enjoy the moment, take every step and take it slow and really learn it deeply. There's always an opportunity to go through those things in the future. But there's some street cred involved when you go through things. I'm in the current position now, and as you read through my resume, you'll notice that I was never a building principal.
Yeah.
So I leapt from 1 year as assistant principal to central office. And that's come back to hurt me at times, not just from a street cred standpoint, but from an empathy standpoint. You know, a central office guy like me sits at central office and sometimes creates ideas and plans and really forgets what it's like to think about, you know, is this the right time to send an email to a principal? Is this the best thing that I should be, you know, talking to them about and how I talk to them? And right now, the things that they have on their plate and the things that they're dealing with, might it be different if I did this? So I've got to be, sometimes I have to act twice as hard to think about that because I'm missing that opportunity.
How did the opportunity arise from your role as assistant principal to director of curriculum?
So it was the same thing where a year after I was assistant principal, a new superintendent came in August to my office and asked me to come to central office and be the director of secondary education. At the time, I had young kids at home. I have a lot of empathy for our administrators and the number of events that they have for coverage. And so it was a great opportunity for me to think about, you know, I said, can't we wait? Can't we wait for a couple of years? I mean, I have it in my mind that I want to be assistant principal for 3 years, principal for 3 years, then I'll go to central office. So he said, I'm not here today to talk about that. And we don't know if that's what it's going to be like. So, you know, I had to think about that. But, you know, the reason why I said yes was because it was a great family move, a family decision. But at the time I realized that I, you know, for the position now that I was in and for where my gifts are and being able to work with staff development, professional development, it was the right timing for me to do that, knowing that the holes that I had were some of the things that I wasn't able to develop while I was assistant principal and working more with discipline and working more with some of the ways that I could kind of interact with teachers and think about that from a building level.
Going from students to adults, what was the biggest change working with a different clientele?
And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say that it's an assumption and there's a flaw. I would say that surface area is that, you know, with students, you tell them what to do. With adults, you have to kind of work more in a collaboration mode. And I had to make that adjustment. I had to learn the idea of how to work through a process and conversing with staff members to create a shared vision, to really listen to them, to, you know, come on board and create that teamwork and that approach of how we do things together. Now, while I say that, my flaw is that that's what I should have been doing with students, and I didn't necessarily set up my classroom that way. As I've grown in becoming an educational leader, I see teachers that have created classrooms that have that very, very makeup. So what I'm saying is flawed in how I created a classroom, but that was something I had to learn. Was you know, I thought an administrator means I could just tell people what to do and it's going to get done. And sure, it gets done out of compliance, but the whole idea about developing commitment is something completely different.
And as an instructional leader, how did you help your teachers, or in your new roles as a director, your administrators, grow in their knowledge and strategies?
So from an instructional leadership sense, in the district that I'm currently in, we've spent 3 years on the same district goals. Prior to me and a couple other administrators coming into our roles into this new district, we all came at the same time. The district was adopting new focus strategies each year. We came in and said, you know, for focus change to happen, it needs to take time. And so we're going to keep the same goals for, you know, at the time we said 2 years, it's turned into keeping the same goals for 3 years. And so I think that idea about keeping focus for a long period of time helps you to go grow deeper, obviously, in looking at those focus strategies, but it also helps us to say no to the outside distractions. There's a lot of things that are emails that we get and, you know, people that you hear from other districts and they're doing things and you kind of get distracted by that and think that we have to do everything. But we realize that our teachers, our staff, our administrators have a certain bandwidth, our students have a certain bandwidth, and that we've got to say no to other things and to stay committed on the things that we think are important. And so we've done book studies on those over the course of time. We've had some collegial conversations. We've brought outside speakers in. We've done a lot of deep learning around those focus strategies, and I think that's really helped us out. Obviously, looking at the right strategies helps. So making sure that we're looking at high yield strategies, you know, from an effect size standpoint makes sense to us. And it's taken 3 years that I would say after the first year or second year, even after the first year, it took staff members, including I think administrators, to realize, you know, are they serious? Are we going to stay with these for another year? And once we said, sure, we're going to do that, we're going to allow that freedom for us to be able to go deeper, really help people to open up and ask questions and feel transparent to say, this is an area I need for growth and let's go ahead and learn together. That wouldn't have happened otherwise.
And the phrase data-driven decision-making gets used a lot. What role did data play in your leadership?
Yeah, so you know, one of our administrators, Adam Shurg, who's one of our principals, he corrects me. I use the word data-driven all the time, and he says, hey, let's start thinking about being data-informed decision-makers. And the idea about that being, let's think about this aspect of using it as data is important, but it's one piece of the puzzle. Sometimes too often, and I think that's where anxious administrators or anxious leaders come in, where we get a new set of data that comes in and all of a sudden we start making changes. I think about a giant computer with all these dials and we start just kind of moving all these dials because we think that we have to make changes because some emergency is taking place. And I think that we need to look at data, definitely, but we need to look at multiple sources of data. We have to look at different contexts of the data. We know that, for example, in our district, we just adopted a new math curriculum in our middle schools and high schools. And so we knew there was going to be an implementation dip. Actually, didn't happen as bad as we thought it was when you think about when, you know, a dip that should occur. But we know that change takes time. And I think that when we look at multiple sources of data, then we start to ask questions. You realize that data isn't necessarily about bringing answers as much as it is about asking questions. And, you know, why did it happen this way? Does it work this way with all subgroups? What does it do longitudinally? What does it do with the cohort system? I had conversations in Ohio about teacher-based teams. So there's district leadership teams and building leadership teams. When teacher-based teams, if it's by grade level, if it's by department, or even if it's you know, a teacher from each content area that are having conversations, if they're talking about data and they're starting to ask questions, that's the right conversation to have, instead of just saying, you know, oh, the data says this and let's just run.
And so what kind of characteristics do you think every leader should possess?
I think some of the conversations that I have when I talk to our administrators is this idea about how do we build in, and this goes back to the idea about collective efficacy. You know, John Hattie has research, shown the research of effect sizes. And if 0.4 is a hinge point where you start to see significant change occur, we've talked in our district about collective efficacy has 1.57 effect size. So four times the amount of change that makes a difference right there. So we talk about this idea about transformational leadership is what I preach about as far as this idea of how do you create these certain cultures that happen, and this idea about collective efficacy. And what that means is how do you take a team and move in the same direction together? And they have a high belief system that they're capable of doing that. We can't just, you know, put the check on the box and say after school we're gonna have a literacy training and we're gonna go ahead and throw some training at you and we're gonna move on there. But if we have it sustained over time and we build culture together with common language and common understanding with deep implementation and work with people to do that, we bring a whole team forward. Then you're gonna start unlocking that 1.5, you know, 7 effect size.
And so as you get higher in the ranks, how do you increase voice to your stakeholders?
I think it's this idea about that vulnerability. Our superintendent, Trent Bowers, you know, really talks about the idea about when we get people together, you have to create a culture where we're watching our own body language. We're walking into a meeting, we're asking questions instead of coming in with kind of the decision already made. Our chief academic officer, Angie Adrian, she's been teaching me this year about even, I'm one that always wants to have an agenda. And I want to walk in because leaders bring in agendas, right? And they're focused. And there are times where she reminds me, sometimes agendas are put-offs. They create anxiety. Sometimes they even lead a conversation your way, but not necessarily the way of where the group wants to go. And so we've been able to do that. We've had conversations with staff members and we walk in with no agenda. And I think they get a little anxious. Where's the agenda? What are we going to talk about? And we say, let's just have a conversation. And you know, we on purpose don't have paper in front of us. And we start asking questions and we watch our own biases about our body language and how we respond to them and staying open-ended to that. Another thing is that, you know, we've got 11 elementary schools in our district, for example. And I had it in my head early on that I needed to get some feedback from our sixth grade teachers. So getting about four or five sixth grade teachers from each of the 11 buildings together. I mean, I could have created one district meeting to get them together. I could have created a survey. I could have had an agenda. And I could have gotten feedback. And Angie Adrian helped to remind me and share with me and say, we're not going to do that. We're going to go to each elementary building and meet with each group separately. And I said, Angie, we're going to go from one-hour meeting to 11 hours. We're going to go and meet with 11 buildings separately. And she said, yeah, we're going to meet with them separately. We're going to go to their building, and we're going to talk to them, and we're going to ask them questions, and we're going to see where they are with this and give us their feedback, because their feedback in their building may be different than the feedback in another building. And they've got high trust between those four teachers. And if we bring them all together, there may not be that trust. I mean, there's, first of all, 50 teachers in the room, but there may not be that trust level. They may not share being transparent and feel safe to be able to share with us. We're representing the district office. We haven't really talked with them. They don't know us as well. And through that conversation, we've hit about 7 buildings since the beginning of the school year, and it's been tremendous. The feedback has been phenomenal. And I think that not only has the feedback been good, but we walk away with a stronger relationship because we did that. So I think sometimes as leaders, we just try to check the box and get the job done. And then I could have walked out of that one meeting with 50 teachers and said, if the superintendent of the board or community or even myself said, did I involve the teachers? I could have said, yes, I did. But this provided an opportunity for stronger relationship and better feedback to occur. And so I think that, you know, even if it's you're staying in one building, if you're at the building level, or if you're a classroom teacher, I think it's, you know, sometimes it's easy to say, you know, hey, I asked all the parents, or hey, I asked all the students, but yet we have to self-reflect and say, how did we ask, and did we ask in a way where we really got to the feedback that we could have? And this was much more profitable for us.
In addition to your admin position, you speak at conferences, you blog, and you're very active on social media. How did you find your voice beyond your position?
So I've always had a love for connecting with people. I think that, you know, prior to Twitter, prior to Voxer and all the different chats that are out there, I am that guy that loves to go to conferences and not just to go to hear the speaker, but to go network with the people that are around me. And so I built a base. I'm always asking people questions. I'm always vulnerable enough in my own district to say, I don't know, but I can find an answer quickly. And so, you know, I use the phone and I, you know, have a text group and I can ask my counterparts in other districts quickly, what are you doing about this? And what are you doing about that? And so, you know, that's been profitable. So when things like Twitter and Voxer and Ed Chats come along, it's only heightened it. It's only made it a lot easier and faster. I'm able to, you know, when a question comes up about what are we doing with blended learning, I can quickly, you know, reach to Twitter and get answers. I was working on a grant last spring and in our lead up Voxer group and said, hey, I'm working on this grant. Has anybody ever written a grant about blended learning? And people were giving me their grant applications. And I was stealing paragraphs from each other. And I bring it back to my district in the next day and people said, how'd you get so far so fast in such a short amount of time? You know, I think that, you know, there's a bad rap at times where people think that going on social media is about self-promotion. That it's all about themselves. And there might be if you're not using it for the right reasons. But when you're looking for it to connect with others, to share with others, to help others, and also receive that help, it definitely comes back and helps your local district. It helps the people that are around you quickly.
And for those starting their leadership journey, what advice do you have for them?
So I think it's don't wait. Like, don't wait for it to think that you have to wait for a title, that you have to wait for a position posting to happen. I think it's okay to contact the leader of, you know, from a building standpoint or a district standpoint to say, I'm ready, I'm willing. What would you like me to run with? I'd love to help lead a group. I'd love to help lead this certain aspect right there. For me, what's been instrumental is in Ohio, we have the Ohio Association of Secondary School Administrators. And I quickly became a member when I became an assistant principal. But I quickly said, how can I be a part of this to help the organization across the state? How can I help other middle school and high school administrators? And I ran for the board. And I got on the board, but if I didn't, I probably would have still said, are there subcommittees I could work on? Can I come to a conference? If I can't present at the conference, there might be something you should be able to present. And if not, that's fine. Can I attend it? Can I come hand out papers? Can I still come and share reflections? And I think this idea about waiting for some type of title to help, you know, accelerate your growth may or may not happen. I don't think you should wait for that. I think you should look for those systems right now. You can definitely start connecting with other leaders through different chats and through different abilities. You know, I'm going to go to AMLE, the American Middle Level Education Association conference in Orlando in October. I'm looking forward not just to go hit the sessions. I just actually looked into the whole schedule and made my plans for which breakout session I want to go to. But it's about meeting the people too. And there's probably a lot of people that I know I'm going to meet. And then there's a whole bunch of people I can't wait to meet. Dwight Carter, for example, a good friend of mine. Dwight Carter is also on social media, and we worked together when we were in New Albany School District, our previous school district. And I remember we were going into a workshop. We were in a conference, the National Secondary School Principals Conference, and we were walking into a session. He said, "What do you hope to get out of this?" And I my mind is racing. I'm talking to Dwight Carter. What's the most profound thing I can think about? So I don't even remember what I said. I just remember I tried to stumble on words to make this eloquent sentence or statement. And then I asked Dwight, "What do you want?" And he said, "You know, I really want to go sit by people where it's their first time coming to a conference. And I want to let them know that they're here and we're here to support them." And so I told him, I said, "Game on, let's do that." So usually I love to sit in the front of when it comes to those things. This time he and I, we sat in the back. And unassuming, Dwight is a very humble person, and people were just sitting down next to him, had no clue the Twitter following that he had, no clue the background he had as a leader. And still he talked to them and asked them, "How can I help you? What can I do for you? What would be something that I could do?" And I think that if we take that upon ourselves to still look around and say, there's something I can do for others, regardless of our title or position, instead of kind of thinking about climbing sort of thing, we're going to be able to find out that it's going to come back to us tenfold later.
I love that. How can our listeners connect with you on social media?
So I'm on Twitter, so you can find me at Dr. Neil Gupta, so DrNeilGupta. I also have a blog on WordPress. I haven't been updating it too often this school year. The school year has been kind of busy, but I did post a blog last week. But that's another place where I like to share information, and I love to read other people's too. So if they have one, they can definitely tag me in that.
And in closing, what is the most enjoyable aspect of leadership?
I think for me, it's this aspect of doing it for the students. I mean, I'll leave with this, is that I've been a central office administrator now for over 10 years. And two years ago was the first time where I'm teaching a class. I've got my own students. A central office guy is teaching a blended learning high school class. And it's taken me 10 years to figure that out. I appreciate my district for allowing me to do that. And it keeps me grounded to remember it's all about the students. So I'm going to end with this idea about make sure you keep that. I know it's the often overphrased word of remember your why and know your why and those sorts of things. But it's definitely true. Simon Sinek is right. When you know what your why is, it's important. I look at it where I could go to work tomorrow because I'm stressed, because I'm thinking about all the chores that I have to do. But if I forget that meeting deals with how I can better help, if I forget the aspect that meeting is going to help me better think about how to keep kids safe and make sure that they're in a learning environment, if I forget those things, then it's another chore. But if I remember what the why is, it's going to be important. So for me at central office, I know that there are days where I feel anxious and I feel stressed, and I got to remember, I got to go to a building. Then I try to work on something and say, you know what, I'm going to take this. I can put it in interdepartmental mail. Guess what? I'm going to go to a building. I'm going to stop over at lunch, talk to some kids, and remember what my why is on that. So as long as you keep that in the front and center, I think it makes it a lot easier.
Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Neil, thank you so much for being on the program.
Great. Thanks. I appreciate it.